You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey friends, I'm Adam. This is The Conversation, and I am so glad that you are here today. You are going to hear from my guest, Sharon Hottie Miller. Sharon is one of the best. This is her second time on the podcast. I interviewed her way back in 2019, which feels like a decade ago. If you want to hear more of her story, go back and listen to that episode. But Sharon and her husband, Ike, pastor a church called Bright City Church in Durham, North Carolina. She is a pastor. She is an author. She is a speaker. Just in general, Sharon is someone I have so much respect for. She is a person that speaks so thoughtfully on many of the different important issues that many of us are wrestling with. Today, though, Sharon and I are talking about control. And if you're thinking to yourself, control, Adam, I don't have a problem with control, then this episode is specifically for you. Hashtag control freak. Sharon and I, we talk about how control shows up in the places that we least expect it to, and she shares how in her own life, so often she tries to control the situations and the people that are closest to her. Lastly, and most importantly, we share some really practical ways to begin to loosen the grip that we have, to loosen the control we try to have in our daily lives. So, as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Okay, so control is something we all want. I think as humans, we are wired to want to control situations, people, circumstances. Sharon, to ask you personally, is it something you struggle with yourself? And if so, are you willing to share different specific things, even if they're bizarre? These are things I struggle with control.
Yeah. The funny thing is, if you had asked me this question 3 years ago, if I struggle with control, I would have said, not really.
I love 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's not something that I've ever felt, honestly, like this is a huge issue for me, that the loss of like feeling out of control is a huge fear for me. It's not something that I've ever felt like I wrestled with. And so the way that I came to this was actually, you know, 2.5 years ago when the pandemic hit. I didn't even wrestle with that, with feeling out of control. Ike did, my husband did, because it sent him into this existential fear about our church surviving, because our church was only a year and a half old. But for me, I was like, this is great. This is an opportunity to innovate. You know, we were very out of sync in our response to the pandemic. But what I was doing in those early months was observing our people and just seeing how are they responding to this and what information is that giving us about their discipleship and their spiritual formation. And it seemed very evident to me pretty right out of the gate, there's a major control issue here, that everyone felt like a loss of control. And instead of receiving that as an opportunity to abide in Christ, it was very much this scramble to what can I control instead? What can give me a sense of predictability and certainty in the face of this? And so I saw that happening. But, and I realized, you know, we need to dig into this, but I don't know about you. I feel like my best teaching comes out of conviction over my own sin. And so that's when I thought, well, maybe I should, you know, ask the question, is this an issue in my life? And when I turned the focus on to my own heart, I was really shocked by what I discovered. And so the way that it played out, it's played out a number of different ways. It played out early on when we were quarantined with our children, because our oldest right now is 10 years old and our youngest is 4. And so back then our youngest was 2. So it was really loud. It was chaotic. I felt trapped. I felt out of control, didn't know what to do because we were trying to lead our church, but couldn't get away from our small children. So I was really wrestling with that. Another way that this has shown up more recently, or at least I should say, I've become aware of it more recently is my husband and I lead our church together. And so we make decisions about the church together. And I don't know about you, but we don't always agree. You know, I don't know if you and your wife ever disagree.
We always agree. Continue on though.
Yeah. So sometimes we would disagree about pretty significant decisions about the church. And so I know how to pressure Ike in a subtle way that does not seem controlling, does not seem aggressive or domineering, but I know what to say and how to say it to make him make the choice I want him to make. Oh, you know, I didn't even know I was doing that until somewhat recently. And then the other piece that it showed up in was with our people, because as we were leading through the last 2.5 years, and I'm sure you experienced this as well, every decision that we made was going to disappoint someone. It just was going to. And I started thinking, well, if I just explain the scripture to them, or if I just show them the experts in our church that we're listening to, or the other pastors that we sought wise counsel from, and I just take that information and I download it into their brains, then they will change their minds and they will now agree with us. And I realized in this process that was actually about control. I thought knowledge had more power. I thought information had more power than it actually had. And so if I can just hand it to people the right way or make the right argument, that I could actually change people in our church. And that doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. It causes actually worse fallout in some ways. So those are just like three, just, you know, off the top of my head, three areas of control that I've been confronting in the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being honest. I actually coming into this, I'm like, what are the things that I struggle with controlling the most? These are going to sound maybe weird, but a clean house. For me, when I'm stressed, cleaning my house is the number one thing I go to. It's my drug of choice, is because I can control it. I can't control what other people think about me. So my house, it's an Enneagram 3 thing. The perception of myself and how people perceive me is gross in my life. And I've noticed that and just began to, gosh, I'll do anything to please somebody or to have someone like me. And then what you are sharing, even church stuff for me in the past, it's been a huge battle of wanting to control things, wanting this or that. But just as you highlighted, never wanting to like clearly have like control things, but just try to subtly control this or control that, which is really hard to come to terms with.
Yeah. And I think that's why I didn't see it for so long is, you know, we're both preachers. And so communicating is a gift of ours. Like we are strong with our words. And because of that, it's really easy to push people in the direction that we want them to go using our words without even realizing that this is actually a form of control.
Yeah.
Another area where I realized this is about control, and I think Ike would be fine with me sharing, this is more his, but doesn't seem like it's about control. Like when I think of a controlling leader, I think of someone who is creating a culture of fear, you know, domineering, aggressive, angry. You don't think about the pastor who will never observe Sabbath, has no boundaries with work, never stops. But that is a control issue. You know, they're burning out because they believe if I don't show up that day, then the church is going to fall apart, or my organization is going to fall apart, or my family is going to fall apart, whatever it is. When you think if I stop, this thing is going to stop spinning, that's a control issue.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like it because you're not controlling people, but it's rooted in this illusion that will burn you out eventually.
Yeah, that's so good. And I hope anybody listening, just even in hearing these examples, it's like, okay, gosh, I can begin to see that. Because I think there's the clear control freaks, and then there's the much more subtle, acceptable control freaks that live inside of all of us. So when I think about control, I think about, as Christians specifically, let go and let God. is kind of the cliche bumper sticker. Is it helpful? Is it not?
For me personally, it has not been helpful. When I've been in the middle of wanting to control something, the idea that I should just let go, just surrender, even though that is deeply biblical, it was not helpful to me. What was more motivating and what was the inspiration for this book, The Cost of Control, was this idea that whenever you try to control something that you can't control, it will cost you. And that totally just changed the stakes of all of these decisions. You know, I can get this immediate outcome, but is it worth the damage it's going to do to my marriage? Is it worth the damage it's going to do to my relationship with my kids or the relationship with people in my church? And so that has been really helpful. But what has also been helpful is remembering that the alternative to control is not just laying dead, you know, just laying over and playing dead kind of and let God, like, as if God doesn't need us, you know, I don't have to do anything, just throw up my hand. Yeah. And what we see from, you know, man's first breath in the world, basically, is that God invites humanity to partner with him. You know, Adam is placed in the garden. He is commissioned with a purpose and with authority and with influence. And so the answer to not control is not doing nothing. It's just to put down control and pick up the influence that God has actually given us. And that has been a much more helpful framework for me personally.
Sharon, can you share a little bit more about the cost you part? Like, honestly, it makes sense as you're sharing it. I don't think I've ever thought about it like that of what is this going to cost me? Like, with control specifically, can you share just more like what does that look like if I try to control something in my life that I don't think this is going to cost me anything by controlling this or that? Can you share more about that?
Yeah. So anytime we reach for control to rescue us or to empower us or to soothe our anxieties in some way, what we're doing in that moment is we are reenacting Genesis 3. This moment when Adam and Eve, they have everything they need. They have freedom, they have power, they have influence, they have authority, they have unity with one another and with God. The one thing that they lack is total control. And so in that moment where they're reaching for knowledge, where they're reaching for God-like stature, they are reaching for the one thing that God has not given them. And so whenever we reach for control to empower us in this same way, we are reenacting that moment, but we are also, unfortunately, reenacting its consequences. And so all the consequences that happen immediately after they eat of that fruit, we feel those, we experience those whenever we try to control something that God has not given us to control. And this is written into the fabric of creation from that moment on, which is why there aren't loopholes here. It's inescapable. And so, excuse me, I look at a number of the different costs of control in the book, but you see a lot of them just right away, like anxiety is a huge one. The first thing that Adam says to God when he explains why he's hiding is he says, I was hiding because I was afraid because I was naked. And we think the fact that he equates that fear with his nakedness, that this is just about shame. And I think there is a big part of that is shame, because shame and hiding go hand in hand. But he doesn't say shame. That's not actually the word there. He doesn't say I was ashamed. He says I was afraid. And the word in Hebrew there is fear. It's very clear what it means. I think what he's communicating in that moment is not so much about embarrassment about his body. I think he's communicating this realization that he just got the thing he wanted. He wanted total control and he just got it. And in that moment, he's realizing to get that, it means putting off the sovereignty of God, putting off the protection of God. And in that moment, he is realizing his vulnerability. He ate that fruit thinking it would empower him, and it betrayed him instead. And we reenact that in so many different ways whenever we reach for control to empower us or to soothe our anxieties. It actually ratchets up our anxieties even more. And we see this happen in a lot of really, you know, low stakes ways. Like one example I can give you, this is like at a level zero in terms of anxiety level, but I've got two boys. And so our house is filled with Legos. We just have Legos like coming out of our ears. And my 7-year-old, his fine motor skills are not very good yet. And so when it's like those little tiny ones and he can't get them apart and he's just like, you know, trying and he's, you know, got veins popping out of his forehead and crying like he can't get it. And the harder he tries, you can see the more, you know, anxious and upset he becomes. And that is a really low stakes example of what happens when we try to control something we can't control. Higher stakes examples are a person, you know, yeah, a loved one who is headed down a path that is towards destruction and you wish you could turn them around and you're doing everything you can to plead with them, you know, to make a different decision, and the anxiety you feel. And some of that anxiety is just because of the decisions that they're making. But what's making it worse is trying to control this situation. And so we get stuck in this control anxiety cycle where we go to control to soothe our anxiety. It doesn't work. It just makes it worse. And so we go somewhere else, you know, to soothe that anxiety. And we're just, you know, that's what we saw at the beginning of the pandemic. So anxiety is a big one. Another huge cost of control is broken relationships because people are not designed to be controlled. Again, we see broken relationships right out of the gate, you know, with Adam and Eve. Rather than take responsibility for his decision, rather than self-examine, he does what control does. He locates the problem in somebody else. He points to Eve. If that was fixed, this would be fine. So there's, I could just go on and on, but those are just two examples. Anxiety and broken relationships are probably the most common costs of control.
I even think about leadership-wise, I went through, I've shared openly on the podcast, a really hard season back in 2018. And looking back, I've never been the angry, yelling boss, but definitely more of what you said about the workaholic and this and that. And I think I went through one of the hardest seasons of my life because I was trying to control things. Like, there definitely is a cost. And it catches up on you regardless of how it looks, whether it looks like it's innocent or not, like it catches up with you in marriage and with your kids specifically. I just think about all the parenting kid struggles that it's like, wow, mom and dad are trying to control so much. And it definitely catches up with us. So in general, practical tips of we struggle with control or we begin to see that we struggle with control. What do we do?
God doesn't give us control, but he does give us agency. And I've already alluded to it. Agency is the influence that we see in Adam and Eve in Genesis 1 and 2. And I define agency as the power to influence yourself and your circumstances. And the operative word there is influence, not control, influence. And a key distinction between agency and control is influence versus outcome. Agency understands this God-given influence that we have over ourselves, over the world around us. Control is not satisfied with that. Control wants to also determine the outcome. And that is where we get into trouble with relationships. You know, you just mentioned parenting. That's a really tender topic. You know, I think about my kids right now are at an age where I can somewhat easily control them. Like, they're young enough that I can somewhat control them still. But I won't see the fallout of that, you know, for 10 to 20 years, which is super duper sobering. And so I'm just prayerful about this all the time of honoring that difference between, yes, I'm called to pour into my kids. I'm called to teach them. I'm called to shepherd them. I'm called to guide them. I'm called to discipline them, you know, teach them about Jesus, all that. but I cannot control at the end of the day the choices that they make with their life. I cannot control whether or not they choose to follow Jesus. And to some extent, I can't control right here, right now, if they behave all the time. I mean, that is like very evident that I cannot control them all the time. And if I try, you know, I'm straying into that realm. But that's a really important distinction to know, that we have influence 100%, but it has limitations to it. And as soon as we start to push back against those limitations, we are going to break much more than we think we are fixing.
You mentioned parenting the last three mornings. So I do drop off with our youngest. He's a second grader. And it's been a fairly traumatic experience the last three mornings of drop off. This morning, Anderson, my youngest, got his feet wet because there was dew on the grass. And so he wanted to take off his socks and his sandals. I kind of had it. So I'm just like, Anderson, we're walking. So I just started walking, whether he was walking with me. We walked past a mom and their child, and they were struggling. And the mom, in total frustration, said, "You're embarrassing me." And I felt bad for mom and child because it just, I mean, like, gosh, okay, that's maybe not the best parenting moment right here. And yet it was everything I felt and wanted to say to my own son. And that's so hard. You mentioned in that definition, you said of yourself. Did you say that? Explain that. Yes. That's what is that? Why'd you say that?
Yeah. Well, one of the only things we really can control is ourselves.
Yeah.
And even that, you know, because of sin, is not total control. But that is a significant area of our lives where we have, because of the power of the Holy Spirit specifically, we have self-control. But what we see in Genesis 1 and 2 is that God gives Adam and Eve these key opportunities to essentially exercise influence over themselves. So let me give you an example of this. One form of agency, and this doesn't seem like a power. It doesn't seem like a strong action verb, but it's really important, is the form of agency of self-examination. So in Genesis 2, when everything has just, you know, gone off the rails, God says to Adam, "Where are you?" And that is a rhetorical question, because God is not confused. He's not wondering, the omniscient God, you know, hasn't been stumped because Adam found a really great tree to hide behind, you know.
That's good.
He's not wondering. And so this question is for Adam's sake, to stop in the midst of this unraveling, to stop and ask, how did I get here?
The heck is going on?
Like, how did this happen? Why, when the serpent came along, why didn't we go to God and at least just ask some good questions? You know, like, is he right? Is he telling the truth? Instead, Adam and Eve decide to just handle it themselves, you know? And then even after that, why did we hide? Why was that our response? And we know how much God loves us. You know, there were so many questions that he could have paused and examined himself to really understand how he had gotten to that place. But unfortunately, Adam is unable to do this. He's unable to respond to this invitation to self-examine. Instead, as I mentioned earlier, he just points to Eve and shifts the blame over to her. And control loves to do that. It hates to stop and consider, maybe I have a role in this. You know, maybe the way I'm coming about this is the wrong way, and I need to examine the source of my anxieties or why I'm having this response in the first place, you know. And so that's a powerful way that we can actually exercise influence over ourselves, is to just stop and to self-examine. And it's a great way to jam up that control anxiety cycle that we get stuck in.
For the person who is going through the absolute worst, whether it's my marriage is coming to an end, cancer diagnosis, church is closing, business is being shut down, bankruptcy, really is one of those rock bottom moments where you feel like you have no control
over anything. Everything you know has kind of been thrown up in the air. Any mm-hmm. pastoral words to them?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. You know, you mentioned how you like to clean your house when things are out of control. And that can be an unhealthy control response. Like for me, that is very often revealed to be a control response when I clean the house and then my kids come and mess it up and I lose my ever loving mind. And then I realize, oh, this was just, you know, another form of control in a really unhealthy way. But a form of agency that we see in Genesis 1 and 2 is naming and ordering. There actually is, it's a beautiful God-given command, really, to name and order our environment. And so we feel a lot of power when we do that. And so I think there is like a healthy outlet when one area of your life is in control to name and to order other areas of your life, to create that sort of a thing, as long as we're not just displacing that control issue somewhere else. So that's just a really, really practical thing. But the thing that I would say on a more pastoral note is to know that the anxiety you're feeling about this difficult thing, the sorrow, you know, whatever it is, that is not just about control. Like what you're feeling is not just about control. Wishing you could control it is actually not always idolatry.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is a reflection of the fact that the world is simply not as it should be. And the reality that we live in this post-Genesis 3 world, but we were created for Genesis 1 and 2. And so that's part of the why you feel that pain is not sin, it's not pride, it's not idolatry. It is your soul experiencing this deep dissonance with the brokenness of our creation. And that yearning for stability and security was put there by you. You were created for it. But that's also why Jesus ultimately came to heal it. And so I think that's such an important perspective to keep in mind when it can feel like, well, I shouldn't control, you know, this is me just wanting control. And it's no, you're mourning the brokenness of God's creation. And God is mourning with you.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com. This show.